This is Radio Eco Shop with your host, Alex Smith.
I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock, where we investigate local production, handcrafted living, and the natural. So why am I considering a home made in a factory? Why did Christine Todd Whitman, former director of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, she's a person with all kinds of options and a sense of local history, why did she choose a prefab house? Can I interest you in a home with very low fuel bills in the future? We've got a good guide to growing trends in green construction. She is Sherry Coons, author of many books. Her latest is titled Prefabulous and Almost Off the Grid. Sherry, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thank you. It's nice to talk with you.
You too. Well, why don't we start with this? What is a prefab home?
Okay, that's a question actually that is asked by a lot of people because they have a lot of misconceptions about what prefab actually is. There are a lot of different types of prefab construction, and in general, prefab construction means that either part or the entire house is built in a factory. So that can include something as complete as a modular, which is made like a box and is shipped to the site and connected with either several or many other boxes, or it can be something like a panelized house or a prefabricated concrete insulated house. There's lots of different kind of options.
But we're not talking about trailers or mobile homes.
Well, mobile homes and trailers are, although those are prefabricated, those are built to a different code. Those are built to HUD code standards. They are different. They are built on a metal chassis, and they are shipped on wheels, and those wheels never come off. And they are not built to universal standards of construction. So, as I said, they're built to a HUD code, which is a lesser type of code. So although those serve a wonderful purpose, those are not the kind of houses that I cover in my books.
All right. Now, why are so many designers and green architects themselves going with prefab construction?
Because there are so many advantages to building with prefab construction. It takes a much shorter time to build with prefab. In some cases, it saves money. It's built in a protected environment, so the materials are protected and they're not out in the elements getting warped and where they could later on become moldy or twist and turn or check. And they're built by professionals that are watching every piece that's being built, and they're being checked by supervisors, etc. So there are just so many reasons. And from an environmental standpoint, the pieces that are being cut off are being stored and used again. When materials are shipped to a factory, they're shipped in bulk so that you're not having individual shipments going over the road. There, many of the materials, such as metal and drywall, are being recycled. So there's a lot of reasons on so many different ends why prefab is better.
Well, to get a feel for this, could you describe for us Christine Todd Whitman's modular home in Oldwick, New Jersey? What does it look like and what does it feel like inside?
Well, the most important thing I think that you need to consider about prefab is that they're indistinguishable from site-built houses. So if you saw this house, you would never say, oh, that's a modular house. The Whitman's house is a beautiful house. It has old-world charm. It looks like it's been there for 100 years, but it has all the modern technology that keeps the house functioning very, very well and very efficiently. So it's a very warm, comfortable house, and it's quite beautiful inside. I don't always get to see all the houses in my books, but this particular one, I did go on the photo shoot, and it's quite a lovely house and in a beautiful setting.
And what sort of green tech did the former EPA head implement in her new home?
Well, the house is built with what they call advanced framing techniques, so that there is no air infiltration. They have all Energy Star windows and appliances, lighting, ceiling fans. There's a even a metal roofing. They use insulated prefabricated concrete foundation, which is very environmentally friendly and also very good from an insulation point of view. They have a tankless hot water heater and programmable thermostats and whole house energy monitoring systems and spray foam insulation. The house was situated on the property so that it was passive solar orientation. And there was just other materials that were used. They used bamboo flooring and cork flooring, which are environmentally friendly, and low-flow shower heads and faucets. There's a very long list, and actually I have all of these kinds of lists in my book that include all the green aspects and the energy aspects of each house.
Right. I found those lists very helpful, and I found some new technologies there that I wouldn't have known about except for the book. And I noticed that these houses are not just energy efficient. Many of the builders in your new book work to make healthy homes as well. How do they do that?
To start off with, I'm very selective in the houses that I put in this book, and so I am very careful not to just pick houses that are energy efficient but that are environmentally friendly from a material point of view and also a healthy point of view. There's one house in my book that was a person that had very substantial health allergy issues, and so they were very careful, as most of the other houses are as well, to use non-toxic materials, even in the decorating, things that did not have allergens and VOCs, etc. They have a very substantial filtration system. So there's a lot of things that people can do. As a matter of fact, I was told, I'm not sure if this is true in Canada, but in the United States, in order to get a mattress that does not have a chemical that prevents fire, you need a doctor's note, which she actually did. And so I did a little sidebar about this kind of mattress acquisition. So there's also, in the book, I guess you noticed, I have a lot of sidebars explaining a lot of the different aspects so that even if somebody doesn't want to build a prefab house, they can learn a lot about home construction, and they can also learn about materials that they might need to build a healthy and efficient house. And the other thing that people, I think, find useful about the book is the resource list at the back of the book, which will tell you where you can acquire many of these materials and also find the architects and the builders who can build these types of houses.
Well, I think the other thing about these houses, they're built so tight, so air circulation is really important. How is fresh air getting into these homes? And also, could you tell us, what is an HRV, I think it's called?
A heat recovery ventilator?
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's almost magic. I am not very mechanical myself, but I'm totally fascinated by how these work. What they do is, it's a ventilation system that will take the stale air from the inside of your house and exchange it with the fresh outside air. But the really special thing that these do is that they'll exchange the heat and the cool, so that if you've spent money heating your house, it's not going to go out with the ventilation system. It's going to be exchanged with the fresh air.
This is Radio EcoShock. We're talking about the book Prefabulous and Almost Off the Grid with award-winning author Sherry Coons. Sherry, when I hear Almost Off the Grid, I picture the woods or the deep desert. But some of your homes, they're located right in Chicago. How do your builders get past those old-style building codes? Well, talk to us about that C3 prefab in Chicago.
The reason that I called the book Almost Off the Grid is because what's important today is that we build houses that are very, very energy efficient. And instead of trying to figure out how to get energy, the idea is to build a house that requires less energy. And so there are houses that are off the grid, and that works very well in certain locations. But the optimal situation is for a house to be on the grid, be creating some energy and giving back energy to the grid when it's not being used, and to be able to get energy when it's needed. And so there are many places in this country, and I'm not quite sure about how it works in Canada, where they have net metering, so that if you're returning energy back to the grid, your meter is going back and you're being credited for the energy that you give back.
But I think some people say, well, you just can't put a prefab here. The building codes don't allow it. But they did. It took a lot of work, but they broke the ground in Chicago and got that prefab in.
That was an unusual situation, actually, because most places in this country, there's absolutely no problem putting a prefabricated house. But in Chicago, it was the unions that were really against having prefab brought in. But the builder was very, and the architect were just very tenacious about meeting every code and crossing all their T's and dotting all their I's, and they were able to get the house built. I think it came out great, and it was a great prototype for what can be done in Chicago.
I know we have to retrofit a lot of what we have. We can't build everything new, but I do think we have to replace some of our housing. It's like we're all driving clunker cars that get 8 miles to the gallon when there are hybrids out there. So talk to us a little bit about infilling cities with greener homes.
Actually, all of my books, I have found houses that are being built in infill lots. And what's happening is that there are areas in many cities, St. Louis and even in Chicago, that are considered the wrong side of the tracks. Actually, there's one in Seattle as well. And the property was bought very inexpensively because it was not one of the top areas in town, but perhaps very convenient to work and to theater and playgrounds and things like that. And so people bought this property at a reasonable price and put up really wonderful houses and are actually changing, helping to change the area and make it more upscale and make it a place where younger people can start moving in with families and urban renewal. These are really great things. And some of these houses that have been built are quite beautiful and they did not cost a lot of money. I think that there's a thought on people's minds that if you're building a custom house, it has to be very expensive, or if you're building a very efficient house, it has to be very costly. And that's not necessarily the truth, because as you, I'm sure, noticed in this book, there's a Habitat for Humanities house that meets the passive code, and it's extremely energy efficient, and it was built at a very reasonable cost.
Well, yes, there's a major home builder, I think Warren Buffett owns them, called Clayton Homes, and they put out a unit that wasn't too expensive called an iHouse. You have that in your book. Could you just tell us a little bit about that?
That was actually a house that I found later on when the book was almost finished, and I have so much respect for what Warren Buffett actually was doing with this that I included the house. I don't actually know that much about that particular house, but I believe what they're doing is building houses so that they can be a product, so that they can be reproduced at a reasonable price. And all of these companies, like Clayton Homes, are making houses available to people that might not be able to afford homes. And they're also building houses that people will be able to afford to maintain because they're built so maintenance-free and environmentally friendly and energy efficient.
It's true. You know, I looked into a subsidiary of Clayton called Marlette Homes. I went and toured one of these houses. They can cost less than $100 a square foot, and they still have things like low-E argon windows. They have lots of Energy Star options. There's great insulation like R33 floor, R21 walls, R40 roof. So it doesn't have to be just something for the rich and famous. But speaking of the rich and famous, how did you get Robert Redford to write the intro for your book?
Robert Redford is, to me, the most important environmentalist we have in this country, and maybe one of the more important ones we have in the world. And it was my wish to find somebody that was a real environmentalist, not just somebody that was talking about it. And when I approached him to do this, he really liked what I was doing, and so he graciously accepted the opportunity to write the foreword for me. And he is just, not only a great actor and a great director, but he is just a wonderful human being and an incredible environmentalist. He's a man that walks the walk and talks the talk. I mean, he spends a lot of his own money to protect the environment, to save buildings from being demolished, from saving land from being overdeveloped. And he does this without any personal gain himself. So I have just the greatest respect for Robert Redford.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the other technology used for these prefabulous houses? For example, what is a SIP, an S-I-P? What is that?
structural insulated panels are panels that can be, they can function as the exterior walls of a house. So they are usually the most common structural insulated panels have OSB, oriented strand board, on either side of foam insulation. And instead of having 2x4s where there's room for air to infiltrate, they are tight together next to each other. And the insulation can either be EPS or urethane. And the thickness of the urethane can depend on what kind of insulation is required. And they butt up to each other, and they are extremely energy efficient, and they keep out noise, and they're just a terrific way to build. And you can see a lot of the houses in my book were built with structural insulated panels.
And I saw in one of the model homes that was up in Florida that solar shingles are finally starting to make it onto the market. Did you see those, or what do you know about those?
Those were made by Dow, and they were made to incorporate right into the shingles so that they are less obvious. I think that it's still a very, very new concept. I don't know that they function at the same level as some of the other PV panels that are available, but I think Dow has incredible research, and I'm sure they're going to continue to improve on them. And I think it's a great way to get some energy into the house if you're concerned about the appearance. I don't have a problem with the way PV panels look, but I think it's an exciting new concept. And I did have the opportunity to see these when I was down at the International Builder Show, and they were presenting this house.
Fancy technology aside, one of the key concepts I got from your book is the important role of using just what nature offers. Could you talk to us about passive solar orientation and things like designing windows and spaces for natural ventilation?
One of the most important things is that the house be situated in a way that you are getting the optimal solar energy in the house. And what a lot of the houses are doing today is they're putting smaller or fewer windows on the north side of the house where they could lose energy and where they're not getting solar gain. And they'll put larger windows on the southern side of the house so that they can get more solar energy and more light. And the other thing that a lot of houses have large overhangs so that particularly in our hemisphere, where the sun is very high in the summer, it will block out the sun from getting into the house, whereas in the winter when the sun is very low, you can get the sun even with the overhang, so you can take advantage of the solar energy. So there are a lot of techniques that people are using today to take advantage of solar energy and make the house just naturally more efficient. The other thing, of course, is advanced framing, where they are framing today so that there is no place for the air to infiltrate through. And so the ideal situation is to build a house where you need less energy. And actually, the house that you mentioned earlier that was built on the Whitman farm, that house has no solar panels and yet requires very minimal energy because the house was built so well and the orientation, the windows, the overhangs, etc., that house requires minimal energy.
So, Sherry Coons, how did you get into this whole prefab craze?
I actually started writing about home construction when I was building my own house, and I had no knowledge at all of any aspect of home construction. And so I went to the library and I took out every book that I could and I did a lot of research. Then after I built my house, I decided I was going to write a book for other people that were going through the same situation that I was so that they would understand some of the pitfalls and some of the things they needed to know. And I thought that was the only book I'd ever write, and I was going to move on and go back to the fashion industry where I had been working for several years. But that book did very well, and I had a call from another publisher who asked me to write two more books. And in one of the books that I wrote, which was House About It, I wrote about all different aspects of home construction. So it was kind of a learning experience for me, learning about doors, windows, siding, etc. That book was called House About It, and I decided to include a chapter on alternative types of construction. And while I was doing that, a friend of mine was building a modular house in my town, so I went to watch it being built, and I was totally mesmerized. I thought this was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. And so I went to my publisher, and for the next book, I said I wanted to do a book on modular. But when I started mentioning this to people, they said, oh, modular, you mean like trailers? And so that first book that I did on prefab was the most over-the-top prefab houses I could find, because I wanted to try to dispel the idea that people had that prefab were ugly and small. So I wrote the book Modular Mansions. And after that was done, I actually changed publishers, and I realized that there were many other types of prefab besides modular. And so my next book, Prefabulous, the first Prefabulous book, described 7 different types of prefab construction, and there were examples of lots of different types of those houses. But as I started writing more about prefab, I realized that prefab was a better way to build, but there was also environmental and energy advantages as well. So as I continued to write the next 2 books, the books became more focused on energy and environmental issues. And now I think that the houses that I have in this current book, the 32 houses, are just about the most environmentally friendly, energy efficient, healthy homes that you would want to build. And they're just incredible examples for people that are thinking about either building a prefab or just building a house. I think all houses in the future should be built this way. And as the codes change, people are going to start building their houses this way.
Well, for people who want to follow up more, do you have a website, a blog, or a Facebook page you'd like to tell us about?
Yes, I do have a Facebook page, Prefabulous and Almost Off the Grid. And I also have my own website, which is sherrykunis.com. And I guess my books are just about the best resource people can find if they want to find out about prefab and also energy efficiency construction.
So I've mispronounced your name all the way through the interview, and it's spelled K-O-O-N-E-S. Is that
correct? That's right. And it's Sherry Kunis.
Okay, Sherry, thank you so much. You've been listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Sherry Kunis. We've been talking about houses that live lightly on the earth in her beautiful new book, Prefabulous and Almost Off the Grid. Find links to all that in my show blog at ecoshock.info. Thank you so much for joining us, Sherry.
Thank you, Alex.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.